Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into another edition of Spits and Suds. I'm Gavin Spittle of 105.3 The Fan, and I'm joined by EP Ringside's Sean Shapiro of Shap Shots as well. You can read some of his articles in D Magazine. The guy's all over the place. Love his NHL expertise and his Stars expertise. How are you today, Sean?
I'm pretty good. We're recording this, and later today for some EP Ringside work, I'm flying to Tampa tonight. And so I'll be looking forward to on Thursday, I'm going to be able to watch watch Bruins Lightning on Thursday night. So I'm going to see a really good hockey game in person later this week. So it's a good week.
Any insight to the hockey listeners of this podcast, why you're going to Tampa and what your concentration is going to be on?
This one is more of just a more procedural, clerical. I'll be honest, the guys who run EP Ringside and Elite Prospects, the company is based out of Sweden. And despite having done some great work with them over the last 3-4 months, I still have yet to meet anyone I actually work with in person. So it's kind of they're coming to North America, meeting with someone who kind of for the first time in person. And then we'll also do some additional as I'm there, always going to be on the eyes for something. So nothing, no major stories coming out of this one, just a good opportunity to actually meet someone I work with for the first time in the day and age we live in. And also I'm sure I'll ferret some things out of Bruins and Tampa throughout the day Thursday too.
It's kind of like us. We knew each other for a while before meeting each other in person.
It's crazy how the world is now, isn't it?
Yeah, technology at its finest. So last night, this is an exciting week, especially, one of the things we love to do is talk, about the overall sport of hockey. And I know when the Washington Capitals come in, a lot of people want to buy tickets to see Ovechkin, rightfully so, or the Penguins with Crosby and everything. So when you look at this week as kind of, the regular passive hockey fan, you might say Buffalo, Carolina, oh, okay. But at the same time, two of the most exciting teams enter the barn this week at the AAC. So last night, I truly enjoyed all three periods. I love that game. I'm not expecting, especially, the first 10 minutes of that game, as open as it was, you're not going to expect that every single game. Different teams had different styles, but from a matchup perspective, I thought the talent shined. I thought it was great seeing a player like Tage Thompson, who we don't get to see. I wanted to get your thoughts because I really just kept picturing Eric Lindros on the ice. He really reminded me of Eric Lindros with that size and skating ability. So wanted to get your thoughts on that. Overall, I thought the Stars played well. And I tweeted last night that I thought Buffalo deserved the 2 points. So that didn't mean I don't think the Stars deserved 2 points as well, because if the Stars had won, I thought the Stars would have deserved 2 points. So wanted to get your thoughts on the overall game. I thought Craig Anderson was terrific. There are random goalies, Sean, that I think can steal you a game. There are your regular goalies like Jake Oettinger, can totally steal you a game, on a consistent basis. I don't like facing people like Craig Anderson. He reminds me of Tim Thomas in that, you know, I mean, he can just play shutdown at times and make these saves similar, I guess, to Anton Hudobin with that flopping style that just looks so spectacular.
I don't think it's fair to Tim Thomas. Like, Tim Thomas was not just that guy who could steal a game.
You're right. You're right.
Yeah. At one point, Tim Thomas won two Vezina trophies and at one point was the best goalie in the world. And so Craig Anderson has never been that. He's never been the best goalie in the world, but he is a guy who, there's a reason he's still in the NHL at 41 years old. There's a reason he's 3 years older than any other NHL goalie. And he has a bit of that. He can have a bit of that gamer mentality. It's funny. Like, you look at kind of the game last night, and games go through segments for me. That's how I look at games. And the reason I would say last night, looking at the game over the body of work, the Stars should have and probably deserved to win last night. However, when you look at the game in segments, after the first period, the Sabres did a great job and earned the 2 points. Basically, the Stars should have been up 3-4-1 at the end of the first period. The game should have been over in the first period. The Stars should have capitalized. They should have finished in the first period. And Buffalo basically dodged a bullet. Craig Anderson helped them dodge a bullet in the first period. And from the second period on, Buffalo deserve to win. They deserve the 2 points. You could have made the claim that either team deserved the 2 points after the second period, but because of, I think it's, you have to kind of be able to isolate the game. If you look at the full game, you're like, okay, you know what? The Stars should have won. They definitely should have been up 3-4-1 in the first period. They weren't. And then give credit to Buffalo for adjusting. Give credit to Buffalo for finding a way to win a game after that dismal turnover display they had in the first period. The Sabres to me are an incredibly exciting team to watch. They've got so much good young talent. They got guys who zip the puck around. They just really lack the structure. And to me, that's the biggest difference. And I made this note in my kind of an observations piece over at Shap Shots last night after the game. That to me is the difference that will keep them at the end of the season when the Capitals and Penguins are in the playoffs and the Sabres are out, it will be because of that lack of structure. And it will be those little, like, they got away with it last night. There's other times they haven't gotten away with it. One of the reasons they're a streaky team is they don't have the structure to play back, to lean back on. So to me, it was a really good encapsulation of who the Sabres are right now. They're a good young team with a lot of talent. Not enough structure probably for that loaded Eastern Conference to get in this year, but as they learn from that, and I think sometimes there's a learning curve that comes with teams missing out in the playoffs and wondering why, and then having a young roster adjust. Like, I think this is a team to watch out for over the next couple of years.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is the year. I think this is the type of game where, like, they're going to be fun. They're always must watch. But one of the reasons they're also must watch is they turn the puck over a lot. They give up a lot of odd man rushes, and they have to refine that before you can really look at them as a actual playoff team, in my view. Now, maybe Pittsburgh or Washington fall off or anything like that, but just my gut tells me that Buffalo is going to be on the outside looking in just because of the lack of that structure.
I would be super excited, though, if I'm a Buffalo fan, because they have some terrific draft capital in this upcoming draft, and they have multiple second-round picks, and they have their first-round pick. Not to mention, I mean, you look at that Jack Eichel trade, and I understand what Eichel's been able to do in Vegas, but at the same time, you know, I think for a guy who didn't want to be in that city, I think Buffalo got a nice return. I like Tuck as a player. And they got some draft capital, so that's good. Yeah. So last night I tweeted out that, you know, I thought Buffalo deserved the 2 points, because I agree with you. In segments, I thought Buffalo toward the end of the first period into the early part of the third period, and then the Stars, I thought, took control. I thought, you know, my tweet was the following. I said, Stars get a point. I thought Buffalo deserved the 2 points. They're an impressive squad to watch. And our friend Marty Turco, who also could steal many games. The Stars probably had 28 grade A scoring chances. They might be fun to watch, but it's hard to say they deserve 2 points on that stat alone, unless you mean 41-year-old goalie counts, then he deserves to get the W. So I just replied, I love Craig Anderson. He made some amazing stops early, as you mentioned, Sean, that kept Buffalo in the game. From the middle of the first until the third, I thought Buffalo was more aggressive, had great puck possession. I think they both deserved a point, and Buffalo played well enough for two. So I think the Stars could have got 2 points too. I just think it's one of, you know, it's just one of those situations, you know, and the Stars did have some grade A chances, especially early. And Craig Anderson came up big for them. So, you know, it's just one of those things. And Pete DeBoer said after the game, like, you know, I'm going to be the optimist. We got a hard fought point. And I thought that was a great perspective from a coach, because, you know, I was thinking to myself, okay, what did the Stars do wrong? And I just didn't see a lot of mistakes. I just, you know, it was a hard matchup, and hopefully, you know, when they meet again in Buffalo, they can get two.
Yeah. It's, I mean, the other thing for the Stars too is, you have, it's easy and it's good that Pete does this, but he is in the position to have that optimism when you're sitting at the top of the Western Conference with 64 points,
yep,
right? Like this, it's all about context here. The Stars' issue is the Stars have 8 overtime losses. They're 1-2 in the shootout. They only have 3 wins. They're doing this math in my head real quick. So there's 3-10 in games that go past regulation right now. And at the end of the day, that's frustrating. And you're talking about, even if you pick up half of those points, you're looking at maybe 70 points right now, and you're on a pace where you're not just on top of the West, you're running away with the West.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, the 3-on-3 overtime is not going to matter after the regular season. And I think that's why it's easy to like look at it this way. If you have a team that's bad at 3-on-3, which the Stars clearly are based off of their results, that sucks, but it's not a big deal, because come playoff time, come the time when to win a Stanley Cup, you will not have to worry about 3-on-3. If you're a team that was in the, Edmonton or Calgary range, or even the Colorado range right now, and this was your record in overtime, it becomes a much bigger issue. You have to fix it, because you don't have the cushion, and you need those points to get into the playoff picture. The Stars have the cushion, and so you want to fix the 3-on-3. You want those additional 6-7 points that could have been out there. But at the end of the day, remember overtime, playoff overtime hockey, 5-on-5, 20 minutes, we go till someone scores.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And Aaron Thacker, who's a fan of Spits and Suds, reached out at ThackMan05 and said, was wondering if you could address the overtime issue for the Dallas Stars on the next podcast. I know playoffs are not like that, but it is concerning, though. And I absolutely agree with you. It's not going to be an issue in the playoffs. And I would say this. I think basically when the clock hits zero, it's a flip of a coin. It's puck possession. Teams have learned how to play 3-for-3, and it's plays keep away until you get that marquee opportunity and then try to get the possession back. But I just think that a lot of things kind of go out the window as far as style and what you can do in overtime. So at that point, it's just hopefully you get puck position, possession or a breakout and can score.
And it is more reflective of the game than the shootout, at least. But at the end of the day, it is a variation that doesn't necessarily reflect who the two teams are at even strength. So it's you as a team and as a coach, you work on it, but I don't want the Stars, if I'm the Stars and I'm Jim Nill or a Stars fan or whatever, I don't want full practices committed to 3-on-3 practice if it's taking away from the finer points of the 60-minute game. And I think that's the decision I'm willing to live with. It's a little bit of a crapshoot, just to be honest with it. So,
yeah. And one of the things that we talked about as we move on from that, on Friday's Spits and Suds, was the possibility of a Roope Hintz return and not playing on that first line. And we discussed, you know, the Tyler Seguin situation. So it was a healthy discussion, and the Stars, rightfully so, I thought, made a great move not putting him in on Saturday night, and as they dominated the Coyotes on Saturday night, to give him some extra rest. And he came back in the lineup and did start, not on that first line, but was incredibly effective wherever he was put, put immediately on the first unit of the power play. And then we saw the transition as the game went along to move back to that first line. I think what it showed is Roope Hintz's versatility. And what I love to see is, no matter where you were putting him last night, he was causing a stir on the ice.
Yeah, he was. There's a stat to me that stands out, just when you talk about the health factor. Roope Hintz, until the opening overtime faceoff, he was perfect 10 for 10 on faceoffs. Just, and I know, and I'm not reading too much into faceoffs as a whether a guy's playing well or not, but a guy coming off a upper body injury is someone who typically you keep them away from the faceoff circle. Honestly, that's the place where a guy's most vulnerable. They get opened up, things get more pressure points get applied to the body on things like that. And so for someone coming back from an upper body injury, not knowing exactly what it is, no matter what it is, it's a part of the body you're using on the faceoff and is now vulnerable in a one-on-one battle. For him to go 10 for 11 on faceoffs, 10 for 10 on faceoffs in regulation, that to me is just a little stat where you're like, okay, this guy is fine. This guy, the health is good. He's ready. And we knew the skating was going to be there, but it's so much more with Roope Hintz now. And it's great to kind of see him take over those other parts of the game as opposed to just being flash and dash. And it's impressive to see. And I like where on Hintz in general, I like where he was. I like that they tried to split things up, and I like that they were willing to go to him on the top line when they needed a goal late. But I think to David Castillo, who wrote a pretty good piece on D Magazine today, just about how, to echo David's thesis here, where the Stars also shouldn't be afraid to continue to try to get things going and mix things up just because Hintz is back. And so I think it's something where that top line is definitely your gunner. It's the one where you know it works, but don't be afraid to go back to those tweaks with Hintz. Don't be afraid to go back to play around if it means getting something else going as well. It was impressive to see his form for a guy coming back after missing 7-8 games. And even with limited minutes now, let's see what he does with even more minutes, hopefully up back to that. So I think he was at 14 last night, hopefully back to like that 16-17 minutes next game, and then up again even further after that.
And the Stars made a move today, loaning Frederik Olofsson to the Texas Stars. So I tweeted out, I loved his energy. I love the aspect of scoring his first NHL goal with Dallas. I thought that was cool. I love the story that you told on a previous Spits and Suds regarding, you know, how he got to the NHL, and how it was kind of fluky how he got to the NHL and how COVID kind of affected it. And so, I mean, I think it's quality depth in the organization when you can send a guy who I didn't think was playing bad and providing a lot of energy and some physicality on some of those secondary lines to send him down to Texas. You know, they can recall him. He's got the confidence now that he can play in the NHL.
Yeah, it's a keep a guy playing, move it, it makes sense. He's the 13th forward now with Hintz back. Keep him playing, keep him going down there. It just makes sense. It fits.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So we move on to tomorrow night's test against, I guess, would we refer to them as the second best team in the NHL in Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, it's
pretty close.
Yeah, it's pretty close. I mean, yeah. you look across the league and it's second best. I mean, it's there's a debate. I mean, it's actually a fair debate of, we know right now off the regular season, it's the Boston Bruins. And then this is a matchup of two of the teams in the conversation for second best team in the NHL. I would argue that Carolina, Dallas, Toronto, New Jersey, and I'll throw Winnipeg in there as a fifth team, even though I think Winnipeg is a notch below those teams. But those four teams, viable claim for second best team in the NHL. And right now, I think on points percentage, Carolina is technically the second best team in the NHL. So yes, but either way, the Stars and the Hurricanes are in that same grouping. And this is I thought the Buffalo matchup was going to be fun, and it was fun for other reasons. This is a reason where we're talking about two teams that this is conceivably, with where these teams are, this is a conceivable Stanley Cup final matchup. Being, if Dallas came out of the West, you wouldn't be stunned if Carolina came out of the East. So it's a big, fun game.
Yeah, I think, for a couple of reasons. One, it's Texas Rangers night. So I've got a little intel. There'll be about 9 Texas Rangers at the game tomorrow. And I think Corey Seager's dropping the first puck. So I think that's pretty cool. Secondly, we mentioned this on the podcast before. The Carolina Hurricanes are owned by a local person. Tom Dundon owns the Carolina Hurricanes. He's done a nice job there. So he'll be in attendance for sure. So there's kind of a local DFW angle. Also interesting, when these two teams met the first time around, Sebastian Aho was not in the lineup, and he has returned for Carolina. Although they got some tough news with Max Pacioretty re-injuring his Achilles, so he's gone for the season. And that was one of those final pieces that they picked up in the offseason, thinking that it would take them over the top. So I love the matchup. I love the styles of these teams. I think it's going to be a real fast team. Fast played. I think it's going to be physical at times. I had a blast watching the first matchup. So really excited about this game tomorrow night.
It should be a really good game. And the Carolina, we talked about it when Dallas went to Carolina. It's such a good, from a stylistic matchup and for a team that the Stars are going to have to, you see a style that's taking over and why Carolina is so good. We talked about this last time they played, just how aggressive and how much they throw basically everything at you. It's a game that will test the Stars in a good way. It's a game that you'll be able to use as a barometer for how they handle things. And it's also just one of those games where it's like, it can be a statement game. And it's a no lose game almost. Actually, you lose this game. Okay, you lost a game in January to a good team from the Eastern Conference. You win this game, it's a statement game. It's a great, like, from a fan perspective, this is one of the best times to get a game like this, because even if you lose, it's not the end of the world. But you win, you can pound your chest about it and get really happy about it. So it's a great game on the schedule for teams and fans to build off of, no matter what happens.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So last week I threw out to you the random, should we change the rule that linesmen should have more say in calling penalties? So my random one today to throw at you is, should goalies be penalized for letting in a goal in overtime?
Should goalies be, as far as,
should it count against their goals against average statistically?
I think it still should.
Okay.
I don't think shootout goals should, but I think we're in a place of nuance and isolation where I think we should still track it. But if you're being, with the way we track things and 5-on-5 save percentage and all that stuff and everything, I think goalies get the proper credit either way now. And so I think it should still count. I do think one proposal that I'm not totally on board for, but I'll throw this out to you because I've heard people say this to me. I've heard people say that if you score the game-winning goal in a shootout, you should get a real goal on your goal ledger. I am personally not for that, but yeah. I've heard some people argue for it. So I'd throw that out to you as my weird one that I've heard other people bring up.
I don't think so. Because, I mean, then yeah. you have to – do you credit the goalie for making an unreal save in a shootout? You know, at what point do you stop? And, yeah, to me it becomes – at that point it's just purely skill. I was just bringing up the goals against because I don't know what goalie can stop what happened to Ottinger last night in overtime. I mean, that Tage Thompson pass was just ridiculous.
And the Stars completely, rightfully so, respected Thompson's shot on the play. And sometimes you just get got, honestly. Sometimes you just get got on a play, and that's what happened.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. All right, so want to end on this great NHL note. 2 years ago today was the major trade in the NHL that raised a lot of eyebrows. Winnipeg sent Patrick Laine and Jack Roslovic to Columbus for Pierre-Luc Dubois and a third-round pick. So I ask you 2 years later, Sean Shapiro, is there a winner in this trade?
Oh, Pierre-Luc Dubois is the winner in the trade because Pierre-Luc Dubois is not playing with how things have turned out in Columbus.
Yeah, yeah.
As far as
And by the way, sorry to interrupt, 60 points last year for Dubois, 50 points already this year.
Yeah, I would say Winnipeg won that trade. The better team that comes out, the team that is, I think the change of scenery, honestly, was actually had potential for a good fit for both players. But I think in the end, Winnipeg ended up coming out much better as far as A, the team's better, and B, they ended up bringing in, they ended up kind of bringing in a guy where they needed that other, they needed that center. They needed something a little bit more. They had the shooter. Like, we see what Kyle Connor continues to do on the power play. While it was great to have both Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine teed up for one-timers on the power play, when you have a position of strength and you can bring in a valuable center like the Jets did, I think it's worth doing. And so I think the Jets, it was a better trade for Winnipeg in the end and will be in the long run. And now, who knows, maybe Columbus goes and wins the draft lottery and it's a completely different long-term playoff for Patrick Laine. But either way, for now, it's definitely Pierre-Luc Dubois and Winnipeg ended up getting the much better end of that deal. And as fun as Patrick Laine can be and what he brings to the ice, there is something to be said for having that center that can do a little bit of everything the way Dubois does.
I mean, I don't want to call them old men, Sean, but it's been quite the revival for a few of the Central Division players. I mean, you look at Jamie Benn's revival, and I mean, you know, he's just a totally different player this year, a different role. And I mean, you know, we talking Lady Bing Jamie Benn here. It's really impressive. And then I also look at Winnipeg, who they're going up against, and Blake Wheeler's having a rebound year. Mark Scheifele's having a good year. You know, and Kyle Connor's just consistent. So, I mean, it's a fun match. Like, I'm really excited to see Winnipeg and Dallas. Winnipeg's given the Stars some problems over the years, but to me, that's an upcoming fun matchup that I want to see as well, because I don't see either one of these teams falling off at this point.
No, I think both. I mean, that one of them will win the Central. One of them will be second in the Central. And depending on how things shake out, it could be the matchup for the Western. It could be they will likely meet in the second round, depending on how things go. And it is it's a style makes fights type matchup where Dallas has one style. Winnipeg has its own style, and Winnipeg has a coach who understands Dallas extremely well, obviously with his own inside intel from the, uh, for the from his time here and Rick from his time in Dallas for Rick Bonus. And it's good to see. I like seeing teams win different ways. I like seeing that Winnipeg is doing it a little bit more based off their defense and the way they're doing it this way. I like seeing that Carolina has a different forecheck than everyone else. I like seeing how different teams play. Cause I think when you have that variety and when you have, variance, and I know I just use variety and variance back to back, I know, but like when you have that across the board where the game can be, you can flip over it and you can be a real nerd about, hey, this is how this one's going to play out. And this one's how this one's going to play out different ways, as opposed to just one style. Like, I think it's great. And it's to me, I think it's just better for the game of hockey when we continue to have good teams playing different ways, because it gives us more storylines. That's my takeaway.
Yeah, no, it would be tough not to give Coach of the Year to Jim Montgomery, but Rick Bonus has done an amazing job with the Jets. So
Rick Bonus should win the Jets.
Yeah,
and this is nothing. It takes a lot to obviously. Jim Montgomery will win the Jack Adams based off the pace and the points, because it's going to be impossible for people not to vote for that. But the way the Bruins team is built and how good that team is.
Yes.
If you look at points and spot versus expectation, and you look at the things Rick Bonus had to do to come into Winnipeg in a team that had, frankly, a self-admitted terrible culture that they fixed.
Yes.
Over the course of 3 months, like, it is, you're talking about a team where flames were fanning, captaincies were literally stripped away, and they've come out of all of this. Like, Rick Bonus should win the Jack Adams this year.
You're absolutely right. You said my point, Sean, because Jim Montgomery has admitted that he went into Boston and the culture was already inside the room with people like Bergeron and Marchand and Foligno and others, you know, leaders in that room. And Rick Bonus had to change a culture. And for that, I agree with you. He should be Coach of the Year.
Yeah. And every other, like, all of these coaches who are in spot, it's kind of funny. You look at how the cycle of coaches has gone. So Jim Montgomery why am I drawing a complete blank on his name right now? The coach in Vegas now was the coach in Boston.
Bruce Cassidy.
Bruce Cassidy. So Jim Montgomery gets to take over what Bruce Cassidy built in Boston.
Yep.
Bruce Cassidy gets to take over what Pete DeBoer built in Vegas.
Yep.
Pete DeBoer gets to take over what Rick Bonus built and helped build in Dallas. And then
yep.
Rick has to take over what Paul Maurice and an interim coach tore down in Winnipeg. So it's like,
yeah, absolutely. And we're not even talking about Lindy Ruff, former Stars coach, having an amazing year. It's all kinds of storylines in the coaching ranks. I've never seen it like that. It is fascinating. And Bruce Cassidy made it a point when they played the Stars to point that out, that, you know, I think it definitely shows that sometimes just a change is necessary to shake things up.
100%.
Especially with the guaranteed contracts, because you can only shake up your team so much.
Yep. And as long as, and I will say this one last note on it, as long as you don't handle your coaching situation as publicly and drag along someone the way the Vancouver Canucks did Bruce Boudreau, the way they did, as long as you don't do it that way, because that to me is a perfect example of how not to handle things. And you know what? Best of luck to Rick Tocchet fixing this. I said this talking to someone the other day. That's a situation where a year from now, when things are still going poorly in Vancouver, there's no excuse for not knowing what you got into.
I was a little surprised he left the booth, because I thought he had a good thing going and I thought he was going to wait for the perfect opportunity. And I don't know if Vancouver is the perfect opportunity, because, you know, under Jim Rutherford, you know, as Rutherford mentioned, they're going to be wholesale changes. So, you know, he's not going to have the parts that he has right now.
No, he's not.
And I agree with you. Boudreau just seems like a salt of the earth guy. I feel for him. And, you know, I hope he stays in the NHL in some capacity, because those problems run a lot deeper than just coaching.
Yep. There's a lot going on there, and it's going to be, I said this to someone else the other day too, Vancouver is, there's a lot of teams, even the really bad teams, where you at least see the path of what they're trying to do, and you see the path forward. Like Arizona is bad and they are not good, but we at least can look at from the outside and see, okay, I have an idea of what the plan is and where they're trying to be in 2 to 3 years. And I get it. You see the same thing with, you look at Columbus. We see the path. Obviously it takes some luck, but we see the path. Same thing with Chicago. Same thing with the Ducks. You look at Vancouver and you're like, I don't see the conceivable plan back. And it's just, that's the most terrifying thing for me, because they are, every other team in the league I can go through and I can see kind of, okay, I see where this plan fits and I see all of that. And just Vancouver, I just don't see a solution.
Yeah.
with the current makeup, with the current ownership, with the current everything, it's not a good spot.
No, I absolutely agree. Well, a good spot to be the next few days will be Tampa. So safe travels, my friend, and excited to read all about it. And you get to see a heck of a game with the Lightning and the Bruins.
Yep, it'll be fun. And everyone, have a great week, and we'll, Friday, right? We're back Friday.
Yeah, we will. And you go in and you tell those people you've never met, I'm Sean Shapiro, and I host a podcast, and I'm damn good at what I do.
Should be my business card. Should be the business card. If people still do business cards.
There you go. Well, that's going to do it for another edition of Spits and Suds. I'll be at the game tomorrow night, so if you want to meet up with me, happy to join you in between periods, and I'll buy you a Frosty. For listening to Spits and Suds, just tweet me at GJ Spittle. He's at Sean Shapiro. Heck, if you're in Tampa, you can tweet at Sean. I don't know if he'll buy you a Frosty, but I'll buy you a Frosty here at the AAC. So it'll be fun tomorrow night. I cannot wait for Carolina Dallas. So spread the word about this podcast. It's called Spits and Suds. It's 3 times a week. It's an exciting program. We go around the NHL, and of course, we talk about your Dallas Stars. So have a great day, everybody.